Hello, everybody. Welcome to another Bruin podcast. We're about to delve into the world of US politics with an absolute expert on things political from that side of the pond. So please make sure you stay tuned after the following messages.
The value of investments can fall and you may get back less than you invested. Past performance is not a reliable guide to future performance. The podcast is not intended as investment advice. No investment is suitable in all cases. Any tax allowances or thresholds mentioned are based on personal circumstances and current legislation which may change. We or a connected party may have an interest in the securities mentioned or may act as principal or agent in those securities from time to time. The podcast content comes from diverse sources whose accuracy cannot be assured. The opinions expressed in this publication are not necessarily held throughout Bruin Dolphin. Investment in currencies other than your own means changes in the exchange rate will cause the value of your investment to move independently of the underlying asset.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another Bruin podcast. We're going to be talking about the big political event of the week, Super Tuesday, and where that fits in the overall context of the race to see who will be the leader of the free world. And we're going to be talking to Andy Blocker, who is the head of US government affairs at Invesco. So, Andy, thank you very much. Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, what is the significance of Super Tuesday? Just, I think if you just start off by laying out how important that is, because it is like nothing that exists in the UK. Does it decide the race? Does it, is it inconsequential? Where in between those two poles does it lie?
Sure. So it is very consequential, right, and more so this year than in any years in the past. And particularly with what was happening in the first four races in Iowa, New Hampshire, and Nevada, which essentially Bernie Sanders won all of those. Buttigieg technically won the delegates in Iowa, but it was really all about Bernie. And going into South Carolina, which was right before Super Tuesday, the thought was Bernie's a runaway freight train. He's going to get this nomination. And so a lot of the establishment, quote unquote, Democrats were running scared and said, we've got to stop this freight train. But what had to happen first was Joe Biden had to win South Carolina, which he did resoundingly. And then you sequentially you saw Buttigieg get out and endorse him, Klobuchar get out and endorse him, and then lastly, the former congressman from Texas, Beto O'Rourke, endorse him. And that was important for the Texas part. So when you get to Super Tuesday, it's like almost 1,400 delegates. A third of the delegates are up for grabs. You have California, you have Texas, these large states at play. And so it was a concern that Bernie Sanders would stack up so many delegates out of California alone that he would not be able to be caught after that.
Our listeners will have missed the use of finger quotation marks when you were talking about establishment then.
Yes,
so
yes.
In terms of the field,
yes,
as exists at the time of recording, you've got the establishment and you've got what, the liberal wing, is that how you would call it?
Sure.
Or who are the non-establishment candidates?
So the non-establishment in the Democratic primary would be Bernie Sanders. And he, because he is a social democrat, democratic socialist. And so that term, he's not actually a Democrat. He's an independent. He just caucuses with the Democrats. And so Elizabeth Warren's considered liberal, but she's actually a Democrat and is just more of a liberal as opposed to Bernie,
right,
who's more about a movement.
So there's like Bernie, mm-hmm, and then there's Elizabeth, who's,
yes,
not the same,
yes,
but also not quite with the rest of the pack.
Yes.
And then there's the rest of the pack. Is that...
Yeah, so right now it's still... Well, I don't know what the time of this is going to be,
yeah,
done,
yeah,
but,
sure,
but today as we're recording, it's
at
Bloomberg...
lunchtime on Wednesday, yeah.
Yes, it's Bloomberg and Biden.
Right.
But it's expected that Bloomberg would also get out given his disappointing performance.
Okay. And Elizabeth Warren, do you think she's going to fight on...
I don't know. That's an open question.
Right. Okay, fine. So then let's put that in the context of, I guess, what we were thinking about things, or what the betting markets were thinking about things, or the predictions, was that prior to Tuesday, there was a high chance that you'd go through all these primaries and it wouldn't really be totally clear who was actually going to win.
Yes.
Is it now... is it now more likely that you're going to get a result by the time you get to the Democratic convention, which is where all this ultimately needs to get resolved?
Yes, that exactly. I think it is much more likely as you narrow the field and get down to two candidates, it's much more likely someone will actually have the ability to get a majority of the delegates going into the convention. It's still likely, it's still possible that you could have someone just with a plurality, whether it's Biden or Sanders.
So that means they've got more than the other candidate, but they don't have the 50% that is required to get the nomination.
Correct. So we don't know. People still have to vote. And even though Biden has all the momentum now, there's going to be more twists and turns in this story.
And obviously from a mathematical perspective, if Elizabeth Warren drops out and Michael Bloomberg drops out, then we just know it's a straight fight and we will get a result, a decisive result.
We are more likely, but remember now, all these people who've been there in the race have accumulated some delegates.
Yeah.
So it's not a certainty because Bloomberg has some delegates, Warren has some delegates, Buttigieg had a few delegates, and Klobuchar had some delegates.
Right.
And they don't just go away. They still are those going into the first ballot.
Okay. So they will get voted for those people who
on the first ballot.
So regardless of who you endorse or whatever, on the first ballot, your delegates still go to
you. You're locked in to vote.
Okay.
According to the vote in the primary or caucus.
Okay. All right, then. That's fine.
But you're released after that. So anyway, that's what they're talking about, a contested primary, where no one has the majority because some of these delegates were won by other people. But it's more likely that there'll be a chance if someone gets enough lead, they can get to the 1991 or whatever the number is, a little under 2000.
Okay. And so who is going to be the Democratic candidate for the 2020 presidential election?
I never predict these things. I mean, today it looks like it could be Biden. Tomorrow could be, I just don't know. But I think if I'm betting, I would bet on Biden.
Okay.
Right now, because the establishment has come behind him. He has the momentum. And there's a thought that Bernie Sanders has a ceiling.
Right.
The people who are committed to him are very committed to him, but it's not going to get above 50%.
And those early states were quite good for Bernie Sanders, but they actually, even though they take up a lot of coverage, they don't add up to many delegates in the overall scheme of things.
Exactly. I mean, it was Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, but in South Carolina, the one that Biden won had more delegates on the line.
Right. Than all of those other ones.
It was the largest one so far.
Fine. So what does that was always highlighted as a good state for Biden, and that's where he focused all his attention after some soft showings at the beginning of the campaign.
Yes.
And what have we got now? A bit under 40% of the delegates in the bank. Is it something like that? So what does the trajectory from here look like in terms of which candidates it favors and stuff like that?
So I think as it becomes a one-on-one, it favors Biden because it's a coalescing of all of the quote-unquote establishment or quote-unquote moderate supporters, which seem to outweigh from all the voting history of if you add up Elizabeth Warren's votes with Bernie Sanders, they do not add up to all of the other candidates who were trying to stay in the moderate wing of the party.
Okay. Well, look, Andy, I want to just confide in you that in our outlook for 2020, almost everything has turned out to be total nonsense. But most of that is driven by this pesky coronavirus thing that's going on. But one of the things that we particularly talked about was Elizabeth Warren's chances. And those have turned out to sort of evaporate, presumably nothing to do with the coronavirus. So can you ease our pain by explaining why it was that she was riding so high in the early phases or before the primaries started, and then has faded so significantly?
She told the truth.
Ah, is that not a good strategy?
She was being hounded about her plan to pay for Medicare for All. How is she going to pay for this? And she actually put pen to paper and went item by item. Here's the taxes I'm raising. Here's all the things I'm going to do, and told people how much it was actually going to cost.
Right, and that's the thing, is it?
Yes, and you notice that Bernie Sanders has been avoiding that question, or at least saying, "Oh, I'm gonna do a tax on all the speculation in the markets, and I'm gonna do something tax the wealthy." But he hasn't been that specific. And when you ask him how much it's going to cost, he says, "Yeah, there's a number out there."
Right.
He's not been tied down on that. But once she did that, I think it hurt her.
Okay. I mean, some of her supporters or some commentators would suggest there's this this horrible word, electability, and that maybe doesn't play well for a female candidate. Do you think that's a genuine... I mean, it's obvious, it must be a factor to some extent, but is it a big factor in the US that, unlike so many other countries that have had, in many cases, some quite successful female leaders, that ceiling just hasn't been broken yet, and people don't seem to be able to see it getting broken?
I think that's a fair point. A fair point. I'm not so sure that's what was driving Elizabeth Warren's.
That's not the main thing.
No, I think it's her politics, considered to the left. She was in the same lane as Bernie Sanders. But Bernie was just, he was breaking through more. And when the fight was between who was going to get those votes, I think he took most of her votes.
Do you, if she drops out, do you expect her to endorse Bernie Sanders?
That's an open question. We were just talking about that yesterday. I think that...
Because she endorsed against him in 2016 or whatever, yes. the primary season prior to 2016.
Exactly. And that was obviously a calculated move to go with the person who was more likely to win Hillary Clinton, the nomination, which she did, so that she could play a role. I think for her, she wants to be involved in whatever administration there is, if it's a Democrat, whether it's Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden. And so that's going to be an interesting calculation. I think her heart is with Bernie, but her head might be with Biden if she thinks he's going to win.
Do you have any thoughts? So I mean, maybe this leads on from that answer, but do you have any thoughts on running mates for either Bernie or, sorry, Bernie Sanders? I should
yes.
treat him with a bit more respect.
Senator
Sanders yeah. or former Vice President Joe Biden.
Yes. So for running mates, I think that for Senator Sanders, I don't, other than potentially Elizabeth Warren, I don't really have much of a look into that. But on the former Vice President Joe Biden, I would say that the top names have been Amy Klobuchar. It have been Stacey Abrams, who ran for Senate or governor in Georgia, but lost, but is a prominent African-American female. Kamala Harris, senator from California. So those are names that have been out there. But I think it's a little early.
Right.
There are people telling Joe Biden's campaign, oh, he should pick someone like months ago.
Yeah.
Like when he first started, he should just start as a joint ticket. I think they were trying to pair him up with Stacey Abrams, but no, he's...
When is it normally decided who the running mate is going to be?
Does normal really count this year?
Well, I don't know.
It's normally...
You need flags to wave at some
yes,
point.
Exactly.
Right?
It's normally leading up to the convention.
So by the convention... You would normally know who the...
Leading up to the convention, there's all the speculation, and by the time you're at the convention, you have your selection.
Okay, fine. So if things now look better for Joe Biden, what is the path for Senator Sanders to get back in the ascendancy?
So one of the reasons, I mean, other than the fact that Joe Biden won South Carolina, it was also the fact that Senator Sanders was, for the first time, receiving extreme scrutiny from the press, from his opponents, questioning his record. And so that did as much to move him down as did Biden's rise. And now that Biden is headed towards becoming the favorite again, the scrutiny is going to switch back to him.
Switch, right. Okay.
And Bernie Sanders is a fighter. And I don't think he's going to just lay down on this one.
What do we know about which of them would have the greatest chance of success in a fight against the incumbent, who we think is likely to be the Republican candidate,
yes,
President Trump?
So you just ask Donald Trump, he'll tell you, it's Joe Biden. I mean, by all of his actions, by the way he talks, by the whole thing we went through last year with Ukraine and
yeah.
He's most concerned about Joe Biden. If you look at the polling, there's a reason for that. I mean, the polling plays in that direction. Essentially, if you look at the Rust Belt states, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, former Vice President Biden plays best in a matchup with Trump, much better than any of the other candidates. And I think his poll numbers are probably more stable we're months away.
Yeah.
And there haven't been a direct attack as there hasn't been the assault that comes at the end of an election. But because he's already been assaulted all last year, because he's already been in office and people know who he is, I think that's why Biden people feel like he would hold up to that scrutiny more and it wouldn't just tank his poll numbers. Whereas with Senator Sanders, there's a lot people don't know, and even the last 2 weeks you've seen as he's been assaulted, it's plummeted his numbers. And it wasn't even a full-on assault.
So what then would be the differences between a Biden administration policy-wise and a Trump administration?
So for Vice President Biden, I think the biggest difference will be measured approach versus volatility. So, and when I'm talking mostly about foreign policy and trade policy, particularly with China, that...
So it's a stylistic difference more than an actual kind of policy difference.
I think directionally, we are in a different place on trade than we were before Trump, President Trump. And so I think we're still, especially with China, going to be in a more antagonistic relationship, but we're just going to do it differently. We would go back to multilateral trade deals. We try to surround them with doing a new TPP. We would actually try to work out to get the Europeans involved in going after China. So, but I'm not sure that would be the extensive use of tariffs the way they have been used up until now. So that's one area. But then if you move to the actual regulation, no matter what the industry, whether it's fossil fuel or whether it's financial services industry or healthcare, you're going to move from a very deregulatory atmosphere, hands off more, and to reversing that trend and being much more pointed in the regulation of these industries.
And more environmental regulations would come back to the fore then?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And, I mean, what are the implications of that for U.S. business? Is it kind of caught whipsawing between these administrations who have a tight regulatory response compared and then suddenly a lax one and then a tight one? Like, how do you manage a business in that kind of environment?
No, I think that's a very good point. I think businesses will adjust once they know who the new president or continuation of the Trump presidency. But the key is that when you're talking about a Biden presidency, for instance, it's really not as much about, it's two things. It's one, the actual regulatory structure, what you're actually doing, and that has an impact. Mm-hmm. But it's also the feeling you get. So it's, do the businesses have confidence that the administration is not going to be antagonistic towards them or going to be helpful or antagonistic? And I think one of the things that's driven the economic growth under Trump has not been just what he's done, but just the fact that businesses feel like the administration is not going to be there to get in their way.
Right.
And even with Vice President Biden, who is probably the more moderate, business-friendly candidate, he's going to have people in place who are not going to be.
Yeah.
And so there's going to be a little uncertainty. We definitely know what happened with Senator Sanders is there, or Senator Warren.
Yeah.
But with Vice President Biden, it's going to be kind of we're going to have to feel our way through it. But directionally, it will change. It will go from deregulatory to at least a pause, and then towards then it's about the degree of which they are going after business.
So what about fiscal policies then? Obviously, the thing that President Trump introduced was sharp, very significant tax cuts. Is there scope to roll those back, restructure them, change the tax code under if Joe Biden were to win? I think we can assume that Bernie Sanders would like to raise taxes quite significantly, but is Joe Biden expected to try and raise taxes?
Whoever the Democratic candidate is going to be, there's going to be tax increases as part of it. That they would probably say it's a redistribution of the taxes, that you'd probably have a tax cut for the middle class, but you would impose higher levels on those who are more well off and corporations. And I think there'll be a big move to do that. There's also discussion of financial transaction tax as well, and that's kind of amongst all the Democratic candidates. I think the key there is that understanding that it sounds easy to say I'm going to tax speculators, and well, the speculators are you and me who have a 401k, that's what we call it in the US, defined contribution plan or pension.
A SIP, yes. Pension plan, So, absolutely. So you're saying they're basically normal people, right?
Not, we would be getting taxed.
Yeah. Not all billionaires. No. Yeah. Okay, and in order for tax policy to change, you don't just need a new president. You need a Congress that wants to, well, theoretically devise those rules itself for the president to implement. So, yes. I mean, what are you seeing in terms of what the makeup of Congress might look like, admittedly, many months from now?
So our calculation right now is that the House of Representatives, which is currently controlled by the Democrats, will remain under Democratic control. It may be a smaller margin, but it will still be House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. And then in the Senate, we see the Senate holding with the Republicans and being under Senator McConnell. And in that scenario, if you have Vice President Biden as president and you have status quo in the Congress, it gets hard to do that tax increase.
Yeah.
Right? On corporations and
hard or wealth. Impossible?
I don't think it happens.
Right.
Now, if the Senate flips, you would have that opportunity. Yeah. But the Democrats would need to have, if Joe Biden's president, you need at least a net plus 3 seats gained in the Senate. And only a third of those seats are in the Senate are up for grabs this year. So it's 100 senators, but 34 of them are up this year.
Presumably not a great collection of targets, because it does seem like people are pretty down on the Democrats' chances of actually making this flip.
Yeah, so there are more states in play that are at risk for the Republicans than the Democrats. I think there are only 2 states that are really in play, Alabama and Michigan. But on the Republican side, you have Colorado first up. I think that's at risk. Arizona, Maine, Iowa, North Carolina, and Georgia. So you have a lot more in play, but some of those states, especially the ones I mentioned at the end there, are less likely to flip.
Okay, well, look, I've got a question that you're going to really enjoy answering. So in the post-war period, I think there's the only times that incumbent presidents have not been re-elected has been when there has been a recession in the year leading up to the election. People love this stat. Mm-hmm. Because of the coronavirus, there seems like an increased chance of a recession coming possibly fairly soon in the US, possibly within that window. Politically, would you expect that rule to hold, or do the specific circumstances of this virus being brought in from overseas, does that somehow play better to the President Trump's cause or political persuasion than it does to the opposition?
So I think it's too early to tell, but the risk that the Trump administration has on this is that if they are seen as being incompetent in the way that they handle the coronavirus, it could end up being similar to what happened with George W. Bush when the Katrina hurricane came through, and there was a slow response to that, because that is what kind of tanked his polling and led to a decline in his second term. So that's more what I think is of concern for him. I said, it's too early to tell on the economic impact in total, but the rule holding is interesting. If you have a positive economic growth, that you're going to be reelected.
Because economically, like generally up until this point, you would think it plays pretty well. For
yes, it does. Yeah? And I think that's what's holding him up. His approval in the economy has gotten up to the 60s for his handling of the economy, yet his approval rating is in the 40s. So there is a delta there that you don't normally see, and it's partly because of his tweeting, the way he can be volatile sometimes and not steady.
Not seeming very presidential, isn't that the language people like to use? Yeah.
Yes, but he's redefining that, and that's fine. But I think it's there's a number of people that if they could keep his economy without the tweets, they would take it.
Yeah.
But not all of the Democratic candidates offer that. And so that's why people think Vice President Biden is better than Senator Sanders.
That's why he's more electable, because he's going to be closer to the economic status quo.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, look, that's been a tremendously useful overview of the interplay between these factors. So, Andy, thank you very much for your time. And thanks to all our listeners. We hope you've enjoyed that. And we hope that you will join us again on the next Bruin podcast. Thank you.